Now the planet Earth spins in a black, star-sprinkled sky. Dusty blue rings like spotlight beams focus on it with a golden word, Universal. An MCA company. On a black screen, titles appear. Steven Spielberg presents a Robert Zemeckis film. Shiny red-orange letters slide into view, sleekly curved with a left-pointing arrow, Back to the Future. Daytime in a room filled with clocks of all sizes, electric and mechanical. Each shows the same time, 7:53. A window shade mutes the bright morning sunlight. Titles appear, starring Michael J. Fox as Marty, Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown, Leah Thompson as Lorraine, Crispin Glover as George McFly, and Thomas F. Wilson as Biff. A review glides past more clocks, a tabletop print of a man hanging from a giant clock face on the side of a building, a kitschy wall clock of a bow-tie-wearing cat with moving eyes and a swinging tail, and two similar ones of a sequined owl and a grinning poodle. Nearby, a framed article proclaims, "Brown Estate sold to developers." Pictures of Thomas Edison and Ben Franklin hang above an unmade twin bed. On a cluttered dresser, a clock radio switches on.
October is inventory time, so right now, Statler Toyota is making the best deals of the year on all 1985 model Toyotas.
A coffee machine with no pot sprays boiling water. Next to it, a lever attached to an alarm clock swings and trips a switch, and a TV comes to life.
The Senate is expected to vote on this today. In other news, officials at the Pacific Nuclear Research Facility have denied the rumor that a case of missing plutonium was in fact stolen from their vault 2 weeks ago. A Libyan terrorist group had claimed responsibility for the alleged theft. However, officials now attribute the discrepancy to a simple clerical error.
Two pieces of burnt smoking toast pop up from a toaster. A stubby metal robot arm swings a can of dog food to an automatic can opener. More titles, casting by Mike Fenton, Jane Feinberg, and Judy Taylor, CSA. The Power of Love, performed by Huey Lewis and the News. Music by Alan Silvestri, edited by Arthur Schmidt and Harry Karamidis. Production design by Lawrence G. Paul. Director of Photography, Dean Cundy. The robot arm dumps the goopy dog food into an overflowing dish on the floor, labeled Einstein, then swings around and drops the can into a wastebasket. A door opens.
Hey, Doc?
A teenager with a skateboard steps in.
Doc! Hello, anybody home? Einstein, come here, boy. What's going on? Oh, God.
Executive producers, Steven Spielberg, Frank Marshall, and Kathleen Kennedy. Written by Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale. The skateboard rolls into a crate labeled plutonium, hidden under the bed. Our view follows the unseen teenager's hand as he flips switches on a rack of professional audio amplifiers. He turns a knob all the way up. A primary power meter needle jerks. He spins another dial, labeled primary driver, then one labeled overdrive. The surging power pins the meter needles. The teenager plugs one end of a cable into an amplifier jack and the other into an electric guitar, a bright yellow six-string. More titles, produced by Bob Gale and Neil Canton, directed by Robert Zemeckis. The denim-clad musician flips a few more switches, then stands in front of a huge speaker cone taller than him. He raises high a shiny pick, then strums. The cone explodes, blowing him backward into an easy chair. A bookshelf topples over and buries him under a mess of books and papers. Still clutching the guitar, he slowly sits up. His mouth hangs open. With a trembling hand, he pulls mirrored sunglasses away from his eyes.
Whoa.
The cone is shattered.
Rock and roll.
He looks at a fire bell on a post. Struggling to his feet, he drops the guitar and digs out a phone.
You!
Marty, is that you?
Hey! Hey, Doc! Where are you?
I found you. Listen, can you meet me at Twin Pines? plant's mold tonight at 1:15. I made a major breakthrough, and I'll need your assistance.
Wait a minute. 1:15 in the morning?
Yeah.
Doc, what's going on? Where have you been all week?
Working.
Where's Einstein? Is he with you?
Yeah, he's right here.
You know, Doc, you left your equipment on all week.
My equipment? That reminds me, Marty. You better not hook up to the amplifier. There's a slight possibility of overload.
Yeah. I'll keep that in mind.
Good. I'll see you tonight. Don't forget now, 1:15 a.m., Twin Pines Mall.
Right.
Marty spins, covering his ears as he stares at the dozens of clocks.
Are those my clocks I hear?
Yeah. It's 8 o'clock.
Perfect. My experiment worked. They're all exactly 25 minutes slow.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that it's 8:25?
Precisely.
Damn. I'm late for school.
Slamming down the phone, Marty grabs his skateboard and backpack and hurries out the door. He slips on his Walkman headphones, then kicks open the converted warehouse's front gate and hops on his skateboard. The slim brown-haired Marty grabs the tailgate of a pickup truck as it pulls out of a drive-thru, and it tows him into town. Now riding behind a Jeep, Marty waves to the women in a corner health club.
Don't need no credit card to ride this train. It's strong and it's sudden, and it's cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life.
The Jeep tows Marty past Hill Valley's main street. Later, he skates to a school's graffiti-covered entrance, where he meets a girl.
So, Jennifer.
Marty, don't go this way. Strickland's looking for you. If you get caught, it'll be 4 tardies in a row.
Later in a hallway.
All right, come on. I think we're safe.
You know, this time it wasn't my fault. The doc said all his clocks 25 minutes slow.
Doc, I might understand you're still hanging around with Dr. Emmett Brown McFly. Tardy slip for you, Miss Parker. And one for you, McFly. I believe that makes 4 in a row. Now, let me give you nickels worth of free advice, young man. The so-called Dr. Brown is dangerous. He's a real nutcase. You hang around with him, you're going to end up in big trouble.
Oh, yes, sir.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker. You remind me of your father when he went here. He was a slacker, too.
Can I go now, Mr. Strickland?
I notice your band is on the roster for the dance auditions after school today. Why even bother, McFly? You don't have a chance. You're too much like your old man. No McFly ever amounted to anything in the history of Hill Valley.
Yeah, well, history is gonna change.
Later in a gym, Marty carries an electric guitar past other auditioners in tight pants and joins his long-haired band members on stage. He faces the mic.
All right. We're the pinheads.
4 judges look on.
1, 2, 3!
Marty grooves with the bassist. Jennifer giggles as she watches her guitar-slinging boyfriend. One stiff, glasses-wearing judge glances up at his stone-faced colleagues, then picks up his megaphone.
Hold it, fellas. I'm afraid you're just too darn loud. Next, please.
Marty gazes numbly.
Where's the next group, please?
Later, in the town square.
Re-elect Mayor Goldie Wilson.
Marty walks with Jennifer.
Wow, I can't believe it. I'm never going to get a chance to play in front of anybody.
Marty, one rejection isn't the end of the world.
Nah, I just don't think I'm cut out for music.
But you're good, Marty. You're really good. And this audition tape of yours is great. You've got to send it into the record company. It's like Doc Brown
saying. Yeah, I know. If you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything.
He oogles a girl.
That's good advice, Marty.
All right, okay, Jennifer. What if I send in the tape and they don't like it? I mean, what if they say I'm no good? What if they say, get out of here, kid. You got no future. I mean, I just don't think I can take that kind of rejection. Jesus, I'm starting to sound like my old man.
Come on, he's not that bad.
Oh,
at least he's letting you borrow the car tomorrow night.
Marty stares.
Check out that 4x4. That is hot.
A black pickup truck.
Someday, Jennifer. Someday. Wouldn't it be great? Take that truck up to the lake. throw a couple of sleeping bags in the back? Lie out underneath the stars?
Stop it.
What?
Does your mom know about tomorrow night?
Ah, get out of town. My mom thinks I'm going camping with the guys. Well, Jennifer, my mother would freak out if she knew I was going up there with you, and I get the standard lecture about how she never did that kind of stuff when she was a kid. I mean, look, I think the woman was born a nun.
She's just trying to keep you respectable.
Well, she's not doing a very good job.
They lean in to kiss.
Save the clock tower! Save the clock tower! Mayor Wilson is sponsoring an initiative to replace that clock. 30 years ago, lightning struck that clock tower, and the clock hasn't run since. We at the Hill Valley Preservation Society think it should be preserved exactly the way it is, as part of our history and heritage.
There you go, lady. There's a quarter.
Thank you. Don't forget to take a flyer.
She hands Marty a blue sheet of paper and moves on.
Where were we?
Right about here.
Jennifer!
An older man drives up.
It's my dad.
Right.
I've got to go.
I'll call you tonight.
I'll be at my grandma's. Here, let me give you the number.
Jennifer writes on the back of Marty's blue flyer, then leans up to kiss him.
Bye.
That's the power of love.
Marty reads the note. I love you. 555-4823. He gazes wonderingly after her.
First time you feel it, it might make you sad. Next time you feel it, it might make you mad.
Stuffing the flyer into the pocket of his denim jacket, he grabs his pack and skateboard, then grabs onto the bumper of a police car as it pulls away.
And it don't take money.
Later at dusk, Marty coasts through a stone gateway into Lion Estates, a suburban neighborhood. He skateboards down a tree-lined street past rows of ranch houses to his own house, where a tow truck backs a car into the driveway. At the curb, Marty flips his board into his hand and hurries up the driveway. He stares at the totaled car.
Perfect. Just perfect.
Inside the house, a tall, heavy-set man confronts Marty's scrawny father.
I can't believe you loaned me a car without telling me it had a blind spot. I could have been killed.
Now, Biff, I never noticed that the car had any blind spot before when I would drive it. Hi, son.
But what are you, blind, McFly? It's there. How else do you explain that wreck out there?
Now, Biff, can I assume that your insurance is going to pay for the damage?
Well, my insurance? It's your car. Your insurance should pay for it. I want to know who's going to pay for this. I spilled beer all over when that car smashed into me. Who's going to pay my cleaning bill? And where's my reports?
Well, I haven't finished those up yet, but you know, I...
Biff grabs McFly's necktie and wraps on his head.
Hello? Anybody home?
Oh.
Think, McFly.
Right.
Think. I gotta have time to get them retyped.
Yeah.
Do you realize what would happen if I handed my reports in your handwriting? I'll get fired. You wouldn't want that to happen, would you? Would you?
Oh, of course not, Biff. Now, I wouldn't want that to happen. Now, look, I'll finish those reports on up tonight, and I'll run them on over first thing tomorrow, all right?
Hey, not too early. I sleep in Saturday. McFly, your shoe's untied.
He looks.
Don't be so gullible, McFly. Got the place fixed up nice, huh, McFly?
Biff reaches into the fridge.
Hey, I have your car towed all the way to your house, and all you got for me is light beer?
Biff catches Marty looking at him. 40-ish and dressed in polyester, Biff stares back.
What are you looking at, butthead?
Biff smirks on his way out.
Say hi to your mom for me.
Marty's dad shakes his head behind thick glasses.
I know what you're gonna say, son. And you're right. You're right. But, Biff just happens to be my supervisor, and I'm afraid I'm just not very good at confrontations. Get the car, Dad. I mean, he wrecked it. He totaled it. I needed that car tomorrow night, Dad. I mean, do you have any idea how important this was to me? Do you have any clue? I know, and all I can say is I'm sorry.
Later.
Believe me, Marty, you're better off without having to worry about all the aggravation and headaches of playing at that dance.
You're absolutely right, Marty. The last thing you need is headaches.
As Marty's dad and brother watch a TV rerun, his bleary-eyed mom brings a cake to the dinner table.
Kids, we're gonna have to eat this cake by ourselves. Your Uncle Joey didn't make parole again.
She tosses it on the table.
I think it would be nice if you all dropped him a line.
Uncle Jailbird Joey?
He's your brother, Mom.
Yeah, I think it's a major embarrassment having an uncle in prison.
We all make mistakes in life, children.
God damn it, I'm late.
David, watch your mouth. And come here and kiss your mother before you go. Come here.
Come on, Mom, make it fast.
Wearing a fast food uniform, David kisses his dad's slicked back hair.
Come on, time to change that oil.
Hey, Marty. Isn't that your answering service while you're outside pouting over the car? Jennifer Parker called you twice.
I don't like her, Marty. Any girl who calls up a boy is just asking for trouble.
Oh, Mother, there's nothing wrong with calling a boy.
I think it's terrible. Girls chasing boys. When I was your age, I never chased a boy or called a boy or sat in a parked car with a boy.
Then how am I supposed to ever meet anybody?
Well, it'll just happen. Like the way I met your father.
That was so stupid. Grandpa hit him with the car.
It was meant to be. Anyway, if Grandpa hadn't hit him, then none of you would have been born.
Yeah, well, still don't understand what Dad was doing in the middle of the street.
What was it, George? Bird watching?
What, Lorraine? What?
Anyway, your Grandpa hit him with the car and brought him into the house. He seems so helpless.
A smile warms her puffy cheeks.
Like a little lost puppy. And my heart just went out to him.
Yeah, Mom, we know. You've told us this story a million times. You felt sorry for him, so you decided to go with him to the fish under the sea dance.
No, it was the enchantment under the sea dance. Our first date. I'll never forget it. It was the night of that terrible thunderstorm. Remember, George?
George sits entranced by the TV.
Your father kissed me for the very first time on that dance floor. And it was then that I realized that I was going to spend the rest of my life with him.
George points at Jackie Gleason on the TV. The family watches uncomfortably. Marty looks away. Later, in Marty's room, a clock radio shows 12:28. Marty sleeps, fully dressed, face down on his bed. He stirs and reaches for the cordless phone.
Hello.
Marty, you didn't fall asleep, did you?
Doc.
Marty frowns at his watch.
No, don't be silly.
Listen, this is very important. I forgot my video camera. Can you stop by my place and pick it up on your way to the mall?
Yeah. I'm away.
Later, Marty rides his skateboard to a mall. A digital clock kicks 1:16 as he arrives, overlooking a rain-slicked parking lot, deserted except for a dingy moving van and a shaggy dog sitting nearby. Marty, wearing a down vest and carrying Doc's video camera, heads down an embankment and skateboards over to the brown and white bearded collie.
Einstein! Hey, Einstein, where's the dog, boy?
Marty stares. The rear gate of the 30-foot-long van slowly lowers like a drawbridge. Clouds of steam spill up into the night, shining in the streetlights. Marty slowly straightens up, his lean, friendly features aglow in wonder. The beady-eyed Einstein cocks his head. As the lowering gate forms a ramp, twin red taillights peek through the steam. A metallic gray sports car backs down the ramp. Two oversized rectangular vents are mounted on the back, above a license plate that reads, "Out of Time." Retrofitted tubes and wires cram in the rear deck in the place of a window. More bundles of wire snake along the body. On the wide front grille is a logo, DMC. The gull-wing door swings up, and a wild-eyed man in a radiation suit clambers out.
Doc!
He grins.
Marty! You made it!
Yeah!
Welcome to my latest experiment. This is a big one, the one I've been waiting for all my life.
Well, it's a DeLorean, right?
Stay with me, Marty. All your questions will be answered. Roll tape.
Okay,
I will proceed.
Doc, is that a Devo?
Never mind that now.
Doc, in his 70s, faces the camera.
All right, I'm
ready. Good evening. I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing on the parking lot at Twin Pines Mall. It's Saturday morning, October 26, 1985.
1:18 a.m.
and this is temporal experiment number one.
Marty shakes his wrist watch as Doc fetches Einstein. The dog jumps into the driver's seat.
Put your seatbelt on. That's it.
Doc's frizzy white hair stands out like a fright wig as he straps Einstein in, then shows two stopwatches to Marty's camera.
Please note that Einstein's clock is in precise synchronization with my control watch. Got it?
Right, checked on.
Good.
Doc grabs a radio control box.
Have a good trip, Einstein. Watch ahead.
Swinging down the gull wing door, Doc steps away and wields his remote control.
Get that thing hooked up to the car.
Watch this.
Yeah, okay.
Doc thumbs a toggle lever, and the DeLorean shoots backward, rear wheels spinning, then turns and heads forward to the far end of the parking lot. Marty's camera drifts to Doc.
Got me! The car! The car!
The car does a sharp 180, then holds, headlights glaring. Under Doc's control, it zooms in reverse 20 more feet. The tall Doc urgently pulls Marty to the middle of the huge empty parking lot.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
He flicks a red switch on the remote, then nudges forward a toggle. The DeLorean's rear wheels spin in place, sending up steam from the pavement. Inside the sleek two-seater, Einstein sits calmly. On Doc's remote, a display shows miles per hour, 40 and rising. Marty, still shouldering the video camera, edges nervously away. Doc looks him back, then stares maniacally at the car as he grips the red switch, then flicks it. The car peels out, straight toward them from 100 yards away. Doc grabs Marty's arm.
Watch this, watch this.
The remote speedometer climbs to 88. Behind Einstein, the flux capacitor lights up. Blue sparks bathe the front of the speeding car. It disappears in an explosion. Flaming tire tracks scorch past Marty and Doc's feet. Doc gapes at his remote control.
What did I tell you? 88 miles per hour!
The car's license plate smokes.
The thermal displacement occurred exactly 1:20 a.m. in 0 seconds!
Marty picks up the plate.
Ah, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, Doc, you disintegrated Einstein.
Calm down, Marty, I didn't disintegrate anything. The molecular structure of both Einstein and the car are completely intact.
Where the hell are they?
The appropriate question is, when the hell are they? You see, Einstein has just become the world's first time traveler. I sent him into the future. 1 minute into the future, to be exact. And precisely 1:21 a.m. in 0 seconds, we shall catch up with him at the time machine.
Doc scribbles happily on a notepad.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style? Besides, the stainless steel construction made the flux dispersal.
He checks his watch.
Look out!
The car appears in a blue flash, skidding sideways across the parking lot to a stop. Doc's wide eyes stare from behind his remote control. He and Marty exchange a breathless glance. 50 feet away sits the DeLorean, covered in white frost. Mist curls up gently. Doc jogs gleefully toward his car, then stops short as the rear vents expel thick steam clouds. He turns to the gaping Marty, then eyes his car. The old man's startled gaze narrows to a canny squint. He smiles cautiously and approaches the DeLorean, a low-slung tool belt at his hip. He touches the door handle, then jerks back.
What? Is it hot?
It's cold. Damn cold.
He toes open the door.
Einstein, you little devil!
He smooches his dog.
Einstein's clock is exactly 1 minute behind mine and still ticking!
Doc undoes the seatbelt and Einstein jumps out.
He's all right.
He's fine! And he's completely unaware that anything happened. As far as he's concerned, the trip was instantaneous. That's why his watch is exactly 1 minute behind mine. He skipped over that minute to instantly arrive at this moment in time. Come here. I'll show you how it works.
Doc gets into the DeLorean.
First, you turn the time circuits on.
He shifts a lever. A triple date display lights up.
This readout tells you where you're going. This one tells you where you are. This one tells you where you were. You input your destination time on this keypad. Say you want to see the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
He enters July 4th, 1776.
A witness the birth of Christ?
He punches in December 25th, year zero.
Here's a red-letter date in the history of science. November 5th, 1955.
As it comes up on the display, Doc starts to grin.
Yes, of course, November 5th, 1955.
Why, I don't get what happened.
That was the day I invented time travel. I remember it vividly. I was standing on the edge of my toilet, hanging a clock. The porcelain was wet. I slipped, hit my head on the edge of the sink. And when I came to, I had a revelation, a vision, a picture in my head, a picture of this. This is what makes time travel possible. The flux capacitor.
A glowing Y-shaped filament.
It's taken me almost 30 years and my entire family fortune to realize the vision of that day. My God, has it been that long? Things have certainly changed around here.
He gets out.
I remember when this was all farmland as far as the eye could see. Old man Peabody owned all of this. He had this crazy idea about breeding pine trees.
Frowning, Doc strides to his van.
This is heavy duty, Doc. This is great. Does it run like on regular unleaded gasoline?
Unfortunately, no. It requires something with a little more kick. Plutonium.
Plutonium. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that this sucker is nuclear?
Hey, keep rolling. Keep rolling there. No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity I need.
Doc, you don't just walk into a store and buy plutonium. Did you rip that off?
Doc urgently waves Marty silent.
Of course. From a group of Libyan nationalists. They wanted me to build them a bomb. So I took their plutonium and in turn gave them a shiny bomb casing full of used pinball machine parts. Come on, let's get you a radiation suit. Jesus. We must prepare to reload.
Later, Doc's rubber-gloved hand opens a steel crate and carefully pulls out one of 12 canisters. Inside the clear, liquid-filled canister is a thin tube of red liquid. Doc wears a radiation helmet as he unscrews a cap from a round casing nestled on the back of the car, then rotates the canister in the hole until the inner red tube drops into the reactor. Doc replaces the cap, then pulls off his helmet.
Safe now. Everything's lead lined.
He grabs the empty canister.
Don't you lose those tapes now. I need that. The record.
Marty nervously watches Doc put away the canister.
Whoop, whoop. I almost forgot my luggage. And who knows if they got cotton underwear in the future. Oh, I'm allergic to all synthetics.
The future? So where are you going?
That's right. 25 years into the future. I've always dreamed of seeing the future, looking beyond my ears, seeing the progress of mankind.
Why not?
I'll also be able to see who wins the next 25 World Series.
Doc.
Huh?
Look me up when you get there.
Indeed, I will. Roll 'em.
Wearing a radiation suit, Marty shoulders the video camera. Doc opens the gull wing door.
I, Dr. Emmett Brown, am about to embark on an historic journey. What am I thinking of? I almost forgot to bring extra plutonium. How do I ever expect to get back? One pellet, one trip. I must be out of my mind.
Einstein sits inside the van.
What is it, Einie?
Doc follows the shaggy dog's gaze to a VW bus cruising toward them along an access road. Doc stares, frowning.
Oh, my God. They found me. I don't know how, but they found me. Run for it, Marty!
Who?
Who do you think?
A terrorist stands up in the VW sunroof.
Holy shit!
The VW speeds toward them. Doc ducks.
I'll roll their fire!
Marty hides behind the DeLorean as Doc shakily aims a pearl-handled revolver. It doesn't fire. Doc gapes, then flees.
Doc, wait!
The VW speeds up, freezing Doc in the open by his van. The tan-skinned Libyan levels his machine gun. Doc tosses away the revolver. Marty gapes. Bullets spray Doc's chest. He falls back.
No! Bastard!
The Libyan aims at Marty, who jumps behind Doc's van. The machine gun jams. Marty bolts, but they catch him on the other side. Helpless, he squeezes his eyes shut.
You wanna...
As Olivian rattles his gun bolt, Marty dives headfirst into the DeLorean.
Go!
The driver snarls. Marty glances wide-eyed at Doc's unmoving body.
Go!
The VW starts up. Marty closes the door, starts the car, and slams it into first. He sideswipes the VW, then veers right, away from it, and accelerates. Marty shifts gear, bumping the time lever. The date displays light up. In his mirror, he sees the gunman take aim. Marty turns hard right, with the VW close on his tail. He upshifts again and zooms along an access road. He swerves left and right. The grimacing gunman can't get a clean shot. The two vehicles barrel down the road.
Come on, move! Damn it!
Marty's speedometer tops 80. At a stop sign, he turns hard right. The VW follows closely. Marty winces as he holds a tight U-turn back onto the parking lot. In his mirror, Marty sees the terrorists struggle to aim a rocket launcher.
Oh, shit! See if you bastards can do 90.
He shifts. The DeLorean speeds forward, outpacing the VW. We glimpse the date display, 1955. The flux capacitor pulses with light. Marty watches his speedometer top 85 miles an hour. The car shoots towards a photo booth. A blue flash fills his view. Suddenly, he's in a field, heading for a scarecrow. A barn looms. Marty's radiation helmet falls over his head as the car zooms in the barn door. In a nearby farmhouse, lights go on one by one. A family of four steps out into the night. The father, holding a lantern, leads the way to the barn, where he slowly pushes open a door. Inside, the steaming metallic gray DeLorean nestles in the hay.
What is it? What is it, Paul?
Looks like an airplane. Without wings.
That ain't no airplane. Look!
A sci-fi comic book shows a silver UFO and a yellow-suited space zombie. The DeLorean's gull-wing door swings up. The two farm kids and their parents gape fearfully as Marty, clad in his yellow radiation suit and helmet, climbs out. Marty holds up his hand. The family runs away.
Listen, whoa.
He trips over a bale of hay. Lifting his visor, Marty sits up. A couple of cows eat hay behind him. He opens the barn door and peeks out, eerily backlit by the headlights.
Hello? Excuse me.
He steps unsteadily through the doorway.
Sorry about your barn.
Marty trips and falls back inside.
It's already mutated into human form! Shoot it!
Paw.
Take that, you mutated son of a bitch!
The DeLorean bursts through the barn wall. The family runs for cover. Marty turns, skidding in the dirt. His helmet falls over his eyes. The DeLorean runs over one of a pair of pine saplings.
I pine one!
Paul's shot hits a mailbox that reads Peabody.
You space bastard! You kill my pine!
Marty speeds out of the Twin Pines Ranch onto a road.
All right, okay, McFly. Get a grip on yourself. It's all a dream. Just a very intense dream.
He gapes and slams on the brakes. The sleek gray sports car swerves to a stop. Marty clambers out, takes off his helmet, and stares. In the low early morning sunlight, farmland stretches away on all sides. Nearby, two stone gates flank a gravel turnoff with bold lettering, Lion Estates. Beyond is nothing but a few construction vehicles and a dirt road leading across the vast green field. Marty jogs over to a billboard proclaiming, "Live in the home of tomorrow, today." A dark red Buick Skylark approaches, driven by an elderly gentleman with his wife.
Listen, you gotta help me.
Stop, Wilbur!
Wilbur hastily drives on.
Can't be.
In the DeLorean, the date display reads 1955, then shuts off.
This is nuts.
Marty turns the ignition key. On a dial labeled plutonium chamber, a red light flashes empty. With a disgusted smirk, Marty rips off his Walkman headphones from his neck, pulls the tape player from an inside pocket, and puts them on the passenger seat by the video camera. Later, no longer wearing the radiation suit, Marty pushes the DeLorean out of sight into the bushes behind the billboard. A nearby road sign reads, Hill Valley, 2 miles. Marty starts walking. Mr. Sandman. Later, he wanders cautiously into the town square. A cinema advertises, any seat, 50 cents. It's the Essex Theater, clean like new. Instead of a XXX movie, Barbara Stanwyck's Cattle Queen of Montana is playing. Marty backs into the street. A shiny green Pontiac sedan rolls past him. Marty walks into a lamppost as he stares dazedly around him. Across the street, a car pulls into a Texaco station, and 4 uniformed attendants hurry over. One opens the molded hood, another wipes the windshield. Outside a record store, a just-arrived sign advertises the Ballad of Davy Crockett. In the middle of the square, Marty finds not a parking lot, but a neatly trimmed green in front of the town hall. Passers-by stare at his blue jeans and down vest. Turning to take in his surroundings, Marty makes his way towards a war memorial in the center of the green. He spins. Atop town hall, the undamaged clock tower reads 8:30. Marty's troubled gaze darts. His shallow breath clouds in the chilly air. A sign reads, Welcome to Hill Valley. A campaign car cruises past.
The future is in your hands. If you believe in progress, re-elect Mayor Red Thomas. Progress is his middle name.
Draped with red, white, and blue banners, and sporting a poster of the balding Red Thomas, the car turns a corner. A businessman tosses a newspaper into a wastebasket. Marty fishes it out and stares at the date, November 5th, 1955.
It's gotta be a dream.
Marty spots a public telephone sign in Lou's Cafe across the street. Putting down the paper, he runs across to the corner cafe on the site of the Future Health Club. Inside, he stares at a jukebox playing in the corner.
Hey, kid, what'd you do, jump ship?
What?
What's with the life preserver?
A teenage boy eats breakfast at the counter. Marty edges forward.
I just want to use the phone.
Yeah, it's in the back.
In the phone book, Marty searches a directory and finds Doc's name.
Great, you're alive.
Lou walks by the booth. Marty nervously hides his wristwatch alarm behind his head, then in his pocket. Lou keeps walking.
Come on.
Ripping Doc's page from the phone book, he returns to the counter.
Do you know where 1640 Riverside...
Are you gonna order something, kid?
Yeah. Give me a tab.
Tab? I can't give you a tab unless you order something.
All right, give me a Pepsi free.
You want a Pepsi, pal? You're gonna pay for it.
Look, just give me something without any sugar in it, okay?
Some of that sugar.
Lou pours a cup of black coffee. Marty leans on the counter and rubs his head. A kid sitting next to him does the same.
Hey, McFly!
Both boys turn their heads.
What do you think you're doing?
Beth.
Hey, I'm talking to you, McFly, you Irish bug.
Oh, hey, Biff. Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Yeah, you got my homework finished, McFly?
Well, actually, I figured since it wasn't due till Monday...
Hello?
Biff knocks George's head. Marty gapes.
Hey, think, McFly. Think. I gotta have time to recopy it. You realize what would happen if I hand in my homework in your handwriting? I'd get kicked out of school. You wouldn't want that to happen, would you?
George hesitates and Biff grabs him.
Would you?
Well, now, of course not, Biff. I wouldn't want
Biff that sneers at Marty.
What are you looking at, butthead?
Hey, Biff, get over this guy's life preserver. Dort thinks he's gonna drown.
Yeah. So, how about my homework, McFly?
Okay, Biff. Well, I'll finish that on up tonight, and then I'll bring it over first thing tomorrow morning.
You're not too early. I sleep in Sundays. Oh, McFly, your shoe's untied. Don't be so gullible, McFly. Okay. I don't want to see you in here
okay.
again.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.
Biff and his buddies climb into a black convertible parked outside the cafe. Biff is tall and muscular and wears his hair cut short. His three buddies follow him in a pack. One wears leather fingerless gloves. Another has 3D glasses. Marty leans over the counter for a close look at his teenage dad.
What?
You're George McFly.
A busboy rushes George.
Say, what do you let those boys push you around like that for?
Well, they're bigger than me.
Stand tall, boy. Have some respect for yourself. Don't you know if you let people walk over you now, they'll be walking over you for the rest of your life. Look at me. You think I'm gonna spend the rest of my life in this slop house?
Watch it, Goldie.
No, sir. I'm gonna make something of myself. I'm going to night school, and one day I'm gonna be somebody.
That's right. He's gonna be mayor.
Yeah, I'm mayor. Now that's a good idea. I could run for mayor.
A colored mayor. That'll be the day.
You wait and see, Mr. Carruthers. I will be mayor. I'll be the most powerful man in Hill Valley, and I'm gonna clean up this town.
Good. You can start by sweeping the floor.
Lou shoves a broom in the busboy's hand.
Man, Goldie Wilson. I like the sound of that.
Passing the counter, he clears George's empty place. George rides through the square on a bicycle, and Marty bursts out of the cafe after him.
Hey, Dad! George! Hey, you and the bike!
Later, Marty runs along a neighborhood sidewalk, bounding on the balls of his feet as he glances between houses. He soon finds the bicycle leaning against a shade tree, but no George. Leaves sprinkle down on Marty from overhead. Looking up, he sees George, stretched out on a spreading branch, looking through binoculars into a house across the street. Marty's eye travels from George to the window he watches, where a woman in a half slip adjusts her bra straps.
He's a peeping Tom.
George loses his grip and drops to the street into the path of an oncoming Chevy.
Dad!
Marty pushes George to safety, but the car hits him. The driver, standing helplessly over the unconscious Marty, shakes a finger at George.
Hey, wait a minute. Who are you?
George makes a break.
Stella! Another one of these damn kids jumped in front of my car! Come on out here, help me take him in the house!
Later, rainfall stirs Marty awake in a dark room.
Mom? Is that you?
They're there now. Just relax. You've been asleep for almost 9 hours now.
She wipes his head.
Had a horrible nightmare. Dreamed that I went back in time. It was terrible.
Well, safe and sound now, back in good old 1955.
1955?
A lamp switches on, revealing a pretty teenage girl.
You're my mom. You're my mom.
My name is Lorraine. Lorraine Bates?
Yeah. But you're so thin.
Just relax, Calvin. You've got a big bruise on your head.
He throws back the covers and realizes he's in his underwear.
Ah. Where are my pants?
Over there. On my hope chest? I've never seen purple underwear before, Calvin.
Calvin, why do you keep calling me Calvin?
Well, that is your name, isn't it? Calvin Klein? It's written all over your underwear. Ah. Oh, I guess they call you Cal.
No, actually, people call me Marty.
Oh. Pleased to meet you, Calvin.
She sits beside him.
Marty? Clyde?
Marty clutches the blankets around him as Lorraine leans closer to his face. He smiles shyly.
Do you mind if I sit here?
No.
Fine.
No, good. Fine. Good.
That's a big bruise you have there.
He recoils and falls.
Lorraine, are you up there?
Oh, my God, it's my mother. Quick, put your pants back on.
She runs out. Marty dizzily lifts his leg into his jeans, then falls over on his face.
Marty. How long have you been in port?
Excuse me?
Well, I guessed you're a sailor, aren't you? That's why you wear that life preserver.
Coast Guard.
Sam.
He appears from behind a television console.
He's all right, thank God.
What were you doing in the middle of the street, a kid your age?
Don't pay any attention to him. He's in one of his moods. Sam, you quit fiddling with that thing. Come in here to dinner. Now, let's see. You already know Lorraine. This is Milton. This is Sally. That's Toby. And over there in the playpen is little baby Joey.
Marty squats.
So you're my Uncle Joey. Better get used to these bars, kid.
What? Yes, Joey just loves being in his playpen. He cries whenever we take him out, so we just leave him in there all the time. Well, Marty, I hope you like meatloaf.
Lorraine shoves a chair under him.
Sit here, Marty. Sam, stop fiddling with that thing and come in here and eat your dinner.
He wheels the TV to the end of the dining table.
Look at it roll. Now we can watch Jackie Gleason while we eat.
The family members all smile excitedly. The little kids eat biscuits and stare at the TV. Lorraine stares moony-eyed at Marty.
Our first television set. Dad just picked it up today. Do you have a television?
Well, yeah, you know, we have two of them.
Wow, you must be rich.
Oh, honey, he's teasing you. Nobody has two television sets.
On TV, Jackie Gleason wears a makeshift costume.
Hey, I've seen this one. This is a classic. This is where Ralph dresses up as the man from space.
What do you mean you've seen this? It's brand new.
Yeah, well, I saw it on a rerun.
It's a rerun.
You'll find out.
You know, Marty, you look so familiar to me. Do I know your mother?
He eyes Lorraine.
Yeah, I think maybe you do.
Oh, well, then I want to give her a call. I don't want her to worry about you.
You can't. Nobody's home. Yeah.
Oh.
Listen. Do you know where Riverside Drive is?
It's on the other end of town, a block past Maple. East end of town.
Wait, not block past Maple. That's John F. Kennedy Drive.
Who the hell is John F. Kennedy?
Mother, with Marty's parents out of town, don't you think he ought to spend the night? I mean, after all, Dad almost killed him with the car.
That's true, Marty. I think maybe you should spend the night. I think you're our responsibility.
Well, gee, I don't know.
And he can sleep in my room.
She grabs his knee.
I can go. Thanks very much. It was wonderful. You were all great. See you all later. Much later.
As he leaves, Lorraine's mother raises her eyebrows.
He's a very strange young man.
He's an idiot. Comes from upbringing. His parents are probably idiots, too. Lorraine, you ever have a kid who acts that way, I'll disown you.
Now, Marty approaches a forked brick driveway off of a quiet street. A Packard convertible stands in front of a garage at the end of the right fork. Marty jogs up the left fork toward a two-story mansion, ablaze with electric lights. A lush manicured lawn sprawls between the house and garage. Marty knocks on the polished wooden door. Paint covers the glass windows from the inside. A face peeks out, then slams the door. A man with a pyramid contraption on his head steps out.
Doc? Don't say a word.
He drags Marty in.
Doc, I don't want to know your name. I don't want to know anything about you.
Listen, Doc.
Detaching a small dog from a smoking machine of wires and needles, he attaches the device to Marty's forehead.
I'm going to read your thoughts. Let's see now. You come here from a great distance?
Yeah, exactly.
Now don't tell me. You want me to buy a subscription to the Saturday Evening Post?
No.
Not a word now.
Doc has a gauze bandage taped to his head.
Donations. You want me to make a donation to the Coast Guard Youth Auxiliary?
Doc.
Marty unhooks himself.
I'm from the future. I came here in a time machine that you invented. Now, I need your help to get back to the year 1985.
Doc's mouth twists into a smile. He grips Marty's shoulders.
Do you know what this means? It means that this damn thing doesn't work at all.
that.
Doc, you gotta help me. You were the only one who knows how your time machine works.
Time machine? I haven't invented any time machine.
Okay, all right. I'll prove it to you. Look at my driver's license. Expires 1987. Look at my birthday, for crying out loud. I haven't even been born yet. And look at this picture. It's my brother, my sister, and me. Look at her sweatshirt, Doc. Class of 1984.
Pretty mediocre photographic fakery. They cut off your mother's hair.
I'm telling the truth, Doc. You gotta believe me.
Then tell me, future boy, who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor? Then who's vice president? Jerry Lewis?
He runs for Marty down the brick drive.
Jay Wyman is the first lady.
Whoa, wait, Doc.
And Jack Benny is secretary of the treasury.
Doc, you gotta listen to me.
I got enough practical jokes for one evening. Good night, future boy.
No, wait, Doc. Doc, the bruise in your head. I know how that happened. You told me the whole story. You were standing on your toilet, and you were hanging a clock, and you fell, and you hit your head on the sink. And that's when he came up with the idea for the flux capacitor, which is what makes time travel possible.
Doc unlatches the garage door and throws it open. His eyes bug out at Marty. Later, the Packard stops at the future entrance of Lion Estates. Marty and Doc carry flashlights.
There's something wrong with the starter. So I hit it. Here.
He pulls away leafy branches, uncovering the DeLorean behind the billboard. Doc fishes a wrinkled piece of paper from the pocket of his smoking jacket.
After I fell off my toilet, I drew this.
He shows a crude drawing of a Y-shaped conduit.
Flux capacitor.
Marty lifts the DeLorean's passenger door and crouches inside, shining his flashlight on the capacitor housing. He flicks a switch, activating its pulsating filaments. Doc's narrow face brightens. He drops to his knees.
It works! I finally invent something that works!
Get your ass, it works.
Somehow we've got to sneak this back to my laboratory. We've got to get you home!
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Later, Marty hooks the camcorder into Doc's TV.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot.
Thank God I've still got my hair! But what on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Well, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
They stare at the tiny screen.
This sucker's electrical, but I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of
electricity. What did I just say?
Marty presses the rewind button.
This sucker's electrical, but I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts!
Doc bolts from the garage.
Scott.
Marty bounds after him.
What the hell is a gigawatt?
In the mansion.
How could I have been so careless?
He talks to a photograph of Edison.
Gigawatts? Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here. I can't be stuck here. I got a life in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Doc, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what she wrote here, Doc. I mean,
the Save the Clock Tower flyer.
Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
Marty takes a second look at the flyer.
We do now.
Doc snatches it from Marty's hand and reads. His eyes flash triumphantly.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower at precisely 10.04 p.m. next Saturday night?
Absent-mindedly, he crumples the flyer as he talks.
If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Okay, all right. Saturday's good. I can spend a week in 1955. I can hang out. You can show me around.
That is completely out of the question. You must not leave this house. You must not see anybody or talk to anybody. Anything you do could have serious repercussions on future events. Do you understand?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Marty, have you interacted with anybody else today besides me?
I might have sort of bumped into my parents.
Great Scott! Let me see that photograph again of your brother.
Dave, Marty, and Linda pose by a tree.
Just as I thought. This proves my theory. Look at your brother.
His head's gone. It's like it's been erased.
Erased from existence.
Next morning, Marty goes to school in slacks and a dress shirt.
Whoa! They really cleaned this place up. Looks brand new.
Now remember, according to my theory, you interfered with your parents' first meeting. If they don't meet, they won't fall in love, they won't get married, and they won't have kids. That's why your older brother's disappearing from that photograph. Your sister will follow, and unless you repair the damage, you'll be next.
This sounds pretty heavy.
Wait, it has nothing to do with it. Which one's your pop?
That's him.
Some boys follow George, punting him in the butt. He has a kick me sign on his back.
Very funny. You guys are being real mature.
Maybe we were adopted.
Okay, real mature guys.
The boys run from an approaching bald man.
Look at that
Strickland. Jesus, didn't that guy ever have hair?
Shape up, man. You're a slacker. Do you want to be a slacker for the rest of your life?
He snatches the kick me sign.
What did your mother ever see in that kid?
I don't know, Doc. I don't know. I guess she felt sorry for him because her dad hit him with the car. Hit me with the car.
That's the Florence Nightingale effect. It happens in hospitals when nurses fall in love with their patients. Go to it, kid.
Hey, George. Buddy, I have been looking all over for you. You remember me? The guy who saved your life the other day?
Oh, yeah.
Good. There's somebody I'd like you to meet.
He takes him to Lorraine and her friends standing by their lockers.
Lorraine?
Calvin!
I'd like you to meet my good friend, George McFly.
Hi. It's really a pleasure to meet you.
How's your head?
Good. Fine.
Oh, I've been so worried about you ever since you ran off the other night. Are you okay?
Oh, it's hurting.
I'm sorry, I have to go.
The girls run to class.
Isn't he a dreamboat?
Doc stares after her in wide-eyed horror.
Doc, she didn't even look at him.
This is more serious than I thought. Apparently your mother is amorously infatuated with you instead of your father.
Whoa, wait a minute. Doc, are you trying to tell me that my mother has got the hots for me?
Precisely.
Whoa, this is heavy.
There's that word again, heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
What?
The only way we're going to get those two to successfully mate is if they are alone together. So you've got to get your father and mother to interact in some sort of social...
Well, what, you mean like a date?
Right.
Well, what kind of date? I don't know. What do kids do in the 50s?
Well, they're your parents. You must know them. What are their common interests? What do they like to do together?
He notices a poster.
Nothing.
Look, there's a rhythmic ceremonial ritual coming up.
Of course, the Enchantment Under the Sea dance. They're supposed to go to this. That's where they kiss for the first time.
All right, kid. You stick to your father like glue and make sure he takes you to that dance.
George, buddy, remember that girl I introduced you to? Lorraine?
The boys sit across from each other in the cafeteria, a few tables from Lorraine.
What are you writing?
Stories. Science fiction stories about, visitors coming down to Earth from other planets.
Get out of town. I didn't know you did anything creative. Well, let me read some.
Oh, no. I never let anybody read my stories.
Why not?
Well, what if they didn't like them? What if they told me I was no good?
He grimaces painfully.
I guess that would be pretty hard for somebody to understand.
No. No, not hard at all. So anyway, George, about Lorraine. She really likes you. She told me to tell you that she wants you to ask her to the Enchantment Under the Sea dance.
Really?
Oh, yeah. All you gotta do is go over there and ask her.
What, right here, right now in the cafeteria? What if she said no? I don't know if I could take that kind of a rejection. Besides, I think she'd rather go with somebody else.
Who? Biff.
He points awkwardly at Lorraine's table where Biff sits, pawing her.
What? You want it. You know you want it. You know you want me to give it to you.
She smacks him.
Filthy mouth. I'm not that kind of girl.
Oh, well, maybe you are, and you just don't know it yet.
Get your meat hooks off of me.
You heard her. She said, get your meat hooks off.
Biff towers over Marty.
Please. So what's it to you, butthead? You know, you've been looking for a pop.
Students gather around when Marty shoves Biff back. The boys grab each other and raise their fists. Mr. Strickland appears, his hands on his hips.
Since you're new here, I'm going to cut you a break today. So why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
As Biff and his friends leave, Strickland hunts down a student throwing paper airplanes. Marty turns back to the table, but George is gone. Later, Marty catches up to him.
George!
George wags a finger.
Why do you keep following me around? Look, George, I'm telling you, George, if you do not ask Lorraine to that dance, I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life.
But I can't go to the dance. I'll miss my favorite television program, Science Fiction Theater.
Yeah, but George, Lorraine wants to go with you. Give her a break.
Look, I'm just not ready to ask Lorraine out to the dance. And not you, nor anybody else on this planet, is going to make me change my mind.
Marty checks the photo of his brother and sister. All that remains of Dave is his feet.
Science Fiction Theater.
Late that night, George sleeps, surrounded by paperback novels and science fiction magazines. Marty, in his radiation suit and rubber gloves, slips the headphones of his Walkman over George's ears. He pops in a tape labeled Edward Van Halen and presses the play button. George bolts up in bed, holding his head. His jaw drops open in a silent scream.
Who are you?
The radiation helmet covers Marty's face.
Silence, Earthling! My name is Darth Vader.
A magazine by George's head shows a spaceman dressed like Marty.
I am an extraterrestrial from the planet Vulcan.
The next morning, George races across the town square to the gas station where Marty holds a Pepsi.
Marty! Marty!
Hey,
George, buddy, you weren't at school. What have you been doing all day?
I overslept. Look, I need your help. I have to ask Lorraine out, but I don't know how to do it.
All right, okay, listen, keep your pants on. She's over in the cafe. God, honey.
He can't twist off the Pepsi cap. George flips it with an opener.
Change your mind, George.
Last night, Darth Vader came down from planet Vulcan and told me that if I didn't take Lorraine out, that he'd melt my brain.
Yeah, well, let's just keep this brain-melting stuff to ourselves, okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, okay. All right, there she is, George. Now just go in there and invite her.
Okay, but I don't know what to say.
Oh, just say anything, George. Say, well, whatever's natural. Well, the first thing that comes into your mind.
Nothing's coming to my mind.
Jesus, George, I was wondering how I was even born.
What? What?
Nothing, nothing, nothing. Look, tell her destiny brought you together. Tell her that she is the most beautiful girl you have ever seen in the world. Girls like that stuff. What are you doing, George?
I'm writing this down. This is good stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Oh,
let's go.
Oh,
can you take care of that?
He rakes his oily cowlick off of his forehead. Inside Lou's cafe, teenagers crowd the booths and the soda counter and dance against the back wall. George tucks his shirt tail into his slacks and eyes Lorraine, chattering with her friends in a window booth.
Lou, give me a milk.
He slaps the counter.
Chocolate.
A soda glass slides straight down the counter to him. He takes a swig, then wipes his mouth with the backs of both hands. Approaching Lorraine's booth, he holds a small black notebook out in front of him and reads from it.
Lorraine, my density has brought me to you.
What?
Oh, what I meant to say was...
Wait a minute. Don't I know you from somewhere?
Yes, yes, I'm George, George McFly. I'm your density. I mean, your destiny.
Oh. And McFly!
Biff's three buddies stand with him in the doorway.
I thought I told you never to come in here.
Everyone turns to watch.
Well, it's gonna cost you. How much money you got on you?
Well, how much you want, Biff?
Marty trips Biff as he passes. He jumps up and looms over Marty, whose eyes widen as they disappear behind Biff's shoulder.
All right, punk. Now I'm
gonna... Whoa, whoa, Biff. What's that?
Biff turns and Marty decks him, then bolts for the door.
That's Calvin Klein. Oh my God, it's a dream.
Outside, two kids ride scooters made of wooden crates. Marty breaks off one of the crates and rides the skateboard wheels away.
I'll get it back to you, all right?
Wow, look at him go!
Marty's high-top sneaker pumps against the sidewalk as he speeds through the store. Biff's gang jumps the hedges and runs through the park after him. Just out of their reach, Marty pops a wheelie on the board and grabs the tailgate of a passing pickup truck. Sparks fly from the skateboard's metal wheels as he heads in the opposite direction. Biff's gang jumps into his black convertible and smashes through the park hedges to cut off the truck. Marty pulls himself along the speeding truck as Biff inches his car closer to Marty's legs. A parked car opens its door right in front of him. Letting go, Marty sails over the sidewalk and into a man and woman. He rolls over them and takes off on the board again as Biff's car chases him down the sidewalk. Biff's buddies jeer as his car noses up to Marty, who grabs onto the hood ornament, trying to break his wheels. Biff steers toward a loaded dump truck, and Marty suddenly lets go, running over the hood of the car and jumping off the back. Biff is still headed straight for the dump truck. Biff slams broadside into the truck, spilling wet soil and debris into his open car. Goldie races out to the dump truck, which bears a sign, D. Jones, Manure Hauling. Biff and his gang struggle under pounds of manure. Marty sticks his hands in his pockets and grins at the scooter-riding kids. Flipping the skateboard into his hand, he carries it to its owner.
Thanks a lot, kid.
Biff scowls.
I'm gonna get that son of a bitch.
Where does he come from?
Yeah, where does he live?
I don't know. But I'm gonna find out.
Later, Marty returns to Doc's cluttered garage and finds the inventor watching the videotape from the future on a tiny TV screen.
They found me. I don't know how, but they found me. Run for him, Marty! Oh my God. They found me. I don't know how, but they found me. Run for him, Marty!
Doc?
Oh, hi, Marty. I didn't hear you come in. Fascinating device. It's video unit.
Listen, Doc. You know, there's something I haven't told you about the night we made that.
Please, Marty, don't tell me. No man should know too much about his own destiny.
You don't understand.
I do understand. If I know too much about my own future, I can endanger my own existence. Just as you've endangered yours.
He stares Marty in the eye.
You're right.
Now, let me show you my plan for sending you home. Please excuse the crudity of this model. I didn't have time to build it to scale or to paint it.
Doc has masterfully recreated the town square and clock tower.
Okay, now. We run some industrial-strength electrical cable from the top of the clock tower down, suspending it over the street between these two lampposts. Meanwhile, we've outfitted the time vehicle with this big pole and hook, which runs directly into the flux capacitor. At the calculator moment, you start off from
down the street, driving directly toward the cable, accelerating to 88 miles per hour. According to the flyer, at precisely 10:04 p.m. this Saturday night, lightning will strike the clock tower, electrifying the cable just as the connecting hook makes contact, thereby sending 1.21 gigawatts into the flux capacitor and sending you back to 1985. All right, now, watch this. You wind up the car and release it.
He hands Marty a toy car.
I'll simulate the lightning.
Doc sticks a giant plug into a wall outlet and, pulling goggles over his eyes, faces Marty in his grease-stained lab coat.
Ready.
Marty raises his eyebrows eagerly, and Doc clamps a conductor onto the Model Town's wire. He holds the connecting clamp over a nail in the clock tower.
Set.
Marty puts the toy car on the table, and Doc looks over the setup.
Release.
He clamps the conductor to the nail, sending a flash of electricity down the wire to the car. It bursts into flames and zooms off the table and into a pile of rags. Doc quickly douses the flaming rags with a fire extinguisher.
You're instilling me with a lot of confidence, Doc.
Don't worry, I'll take care of the lightning. You just take care of your pop.
He peers through the goggles.
By the way, what happened today? Did he ask her out?
I think so.
What did she say?
Doc peeks around the window shade of the garage door. His eyes flash wildly at Marty.
It's your mom! She's tracked it down! Hey, let's cover the timing!
They yank a heavy tarp over the DeLorean before Doc opens the door. Lorraine enters uncertainly, cradling her books at her chest. Her face brightens when she sees Marty inside.
Marty?
Lorraine. How did you know I was here?
I followed you.
Oh, this is my, Doc. My uncle. Doc. Brown.
Hi.
Hi.
Doc glares at Marty over her head.
Marty, this may seem a little forward, but I was kind of wondering if you'd ask me to the Enchantment Under the Sea dance on Saturday?
She bobs her head bashfully.
Wow, you mean nobody's asked you?
No, not yet.
What about George?
George McFly? Oh, he's kind of cute and all, but not. Well, I think a man should be strong, so he can stand up for himself and protect the woman he loves.
She shows Marty a dimply smile, and he nervously rubs his neck.
Don't you?
He grins sheepishly. Later, Marty confronts George.
I still don't understand. How am I supposed to go to the dance with her if she's already going to the dance with you?
Because, George, she wants to go with you. She just doesn't know it yet. That's why we got to show her that you, George McFly, are a fighter. You're somebody who's going to stand up for yourself, somebody who's going to protect her.
Yeah, but I've never picked a fight in my entire life.
Look, you're not going to be picking a fight, Dad. Dad, Daddy-O. You're coming to a rescue, right? Okay, let's go over the plan again. 8:55, where are you going to be?
I'm going to be at the dance.
Right, and where am I going to be?
You're going to be in the car with her.
Right, okay, so right around 9 o'clock, she's going to get very angry with me.
Why is she going to get angry with you?
Well, because, George, nice girls get angry when guys take advantage of them.
Oh, you mean you're going to go touch her on her...
No, George. Look, it's just an act, right? Okay, so... 9 o'clock, you're strolling through the parking lot. You see us struggling in the car. You walk up, you open the door, and you say, you're lying, George.
George strikes an acting pose.
Hey, you, get your damn hands off her.
He frowns thoughtfully.
You really think I ought to swear?
Yes, definitely. God damn it, George, swear. Okay, so now, you come up. You punch me in the stomach. I'm out for the count, right? And you and Lorraine live happily ever after.
Oh, you make it sound so easy. I wish I wasn't so scared.
George, there's nothing to be scared of. All it takes is a little self-confidence. You know, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything.
Saturday night, nearly 8 o'clock. In the town square, Doc connects extension cables from the clock tower to a lamppost.
Lowest tonight in the upper 40.
Are you sure about this storm?
Says, when can weathermen predict the weather, let alone the future?
You know, Marty, I'm going to be very sad to see you go. You've really made a difference in my life. You've given me something to shoot for. Just knowing that I'm going to be around to see 1985, that I'm going to succeed in this, that I'm going to have a chance to travel through time.
Marty's face falls. Sorrowfully, he carries a coil of rope to the DeLorean.
It's going to be really hard waiting 30 years before I can talk to you about everything that's happened in the past few days. I'm really going to miss you, Marty.
Marty forces a smile.
I'm really going to miss you.
Doc stares at Marty's sad face, then continues setting up the car.
Doc, about the future.
No! Marty! We've already agreed that having information about the future could be extremely dangerous. Even if your intentions are good, it can backfire drastically. Whatever you've got to tell me, I'll find out through the natural course of time.
Later, Marty writes a note.
Dear Dr. Brown, on the night that I go back in time, you will be shot by terrorists. Please take whatever precautions are necessary to prevent this terrible disaster. Your friend, Marty.
On the envelope, he writes, "Do not open until 1985. Now a cop stands by the covered DeLorean.
Evening, Dr. Brown. What's with the wire?
Oh, just a little weather experiment.
What you got under here?
Don't touch that. Some new specialized weather sensing equipment.
You got a permit for that?
Of course I do.
Marty slips his letter into the pocket of Doc's trench coat.
Just a second. Let me see if I can find it here.
Now a rhythm and blues quintet called Marvin Berry and the Starlighters performs on a stage in silvery sharkskin jackets. The high school gym is decorated with an underwater mural and lighted seashells. Girls swirl the skirts of their formal gowns as their dates spin them around the gym floor. By a statue of Neptune, George snaps his fingers, wearing a white dinner jacket and a narrow bow tie. He dances alone, swinging his arms. Outside, Marty pulls into the parking lot in Doc's cream-colored Packard. Lorraine sits beside him, combing her fingers through her chestnut hair. He grips the wheel uneasily and adjusts his necktie.
Do you mind if we park for a while?
That's a great idea. I'd love to park.
Huh?
Marty, I'm almost 18 years old. It's not like I've never parked before.
What?
Marty, you seem so nervous. Is something wrong?
No.
She glances around, then takes a flask from her evening bag.
Lorraine, what are you doing?
I swiped it from the old lady's liquor cabinet.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't drink.
Why not?
Because you might regret it later in life.
Don't be such a square. Everybody who's anybody drinks.
Lorraine lights a cigarette, and Marty spits his drink.
Jesus, you smoke too?
Marty, you're beginning to sound just like my mother.
Back in the gym, Marvin Berry conducts the Starlighters with a lassoing wave of his hand. Grinning at the dancers on the floor below, he steps up to the microphone.
We're gonna take a little break, but we'll be back in a while, so don't nobody go nowhere.
By the refreshments, George sips from a punch cup and notices the wall clock, 1 minute before 9. Gaping, he looks at his wristwatch, then gapes again. In the parking lot, Lorraine slips off her jacket, revealing a low-cut, strapless gown.
Marty? Why are you so nervous?
Lorraine, have you ever been in a situation where you knew you had to act a certain way, but when you got there, you didn't know if you could go through with it?
Oh, you mean like how you're supposed to act on a first date?
Sort of.
Oh, I think I know exactly what you mean.
You do?
You know what I do in those situations?
What?
I don't worry.
She lunges across the seat and kisses him on the mouth. Marty stares wide-eyed, groping for the steering wheel. Lorraine's brown eyes suddenly fly open, and she stops kissing him. Moving slowly back to her side of the car, she gazes at Marty's panic-stricken face.
This is all wrong. I don't know what it is. But when I kiss you, it's like I'm kissing my brother. I guess that doesn't make any sense, does it?
Believe me, it makes perfect sense.
Somebody's coming.
A beefy hand reaches in and hauls Marty out by his suit jacket.
You caused $300 damage to my car, you son of a bitch. And I'm gonna take it out of your ass.
He shoves him to his friends.
Let him go, Biff. You're drunk.
Well, looky what we have here.
He can see down her gown. She shrinks away.
No, no. Stay right here with me.
No, Biff,
come on,
no,
Lorraine.
Biff,
come
let
on.
Me go.
Don't leave her alone, you bastard. You got to take him in back, all right? I'll be right there.
His buddies leer as they hold Marty's arms.
Well, go on. This ain't no peep show.
They sock Marty in the gut, doubling him over. Carrying him, they spot a Cadillac's open trunk. As they toss him in, one of the Starlighters steps from the car.
The hell are you doing to my car?
Hey, beat it, Spook. This don't concern you.
Starlighters and smoke pour from the car.
Who are you calling Spook, Peckerwood?
Hey, listen, guys. Look, I don't want to mess with no reefer addicts, okay?
Get home to your mama, boy.
The boys scram, chased by the band. Marvin bends over the trunk.
Get out of
here! Go! Come here, your keys.
Hey, the keys are in the trunk.
Say that again.
I said the keys are in here.
Now George runs out of the gym, flailing his arms. In the parking lot, he sees the Packard and Lorraine's stockinged leg kicking desperately against the window. George sucks in his breath and attempts to swagger to the car door.
Hey, you, get your damn hands off.
He quivers at the sight of Biff.
Oh, I think you got the wrong car, McFly.
George, help me, please.
Just turn around, McFly, and walk away. Are you deaf, McFly? Close the door and beat it.
George points a scolding finger.
No, Biff. You leave her alone.
All right, McFly.
He pulls his bulk out of the car.
You're asking for it, and now you're going to get it.
George swings, but Biff grabs his arm and twists it.
Biff, you'll break his arm!
Now Marvin jimmies his trunk with a screwdriver.
Ow! Damn it, man, it's like my hand! Whose are these?
Mine.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Back at the car.
You're gonna break his arm!
She pounces on him.
Biff! Leave him alone!
Biff grabs her face and shoves her to the ground. She sits down hard on the pavement and looks pleadingly at George. As George stares in horror, his left hand clenches into a fist. Pulling his arm back, he connects with Biff's jaw. The punch spins Biff around against the car. Marty arrives just in time to see him slide down the Packard and land unconscious on the blacktop. George stares in awe at his own hand, trembling with excitement in the chilly night air.
Are you okay?
Lorraine nods meekly and takes George's hands as he helps her to her feet. Her eyes sparkle as she smiles at him, showing her dimples. Couples stream out of the gym to where Biff lies on the ground. Lorraine and George stroll through them hand in hand, lost in each other's eyes.
That guy!
That's George McFly.
In Marty's photo, his sister is half gone.
That's George McFly?
Now in the town square, Doc tucks a wrench under his arm and checks his pocket watch against the clock tower, which reads 9:30. A breeze riffles his wiry hair.
The storm.
Now Marty rushes the band.
Hey, guys, you gotta get back in there and finish the dance.
Hey, man, look at Marvin's hand. He can't play with his hand like that, and we can't play without him.
Yeah, well, look, Marvin, you gotta play.
See, that's where they kiss for the first time on the dance floor. And if there's no music, they can't dance. If they can't dance, they can't kiss. If they can't kiss, they can't fall in love, and I'm history.
Hey, man, the dance is over. Unless you know somebody else that can play the guitar.
Moments later, Marty strums Marvin's guitar on stage.
This is for all you lovers out there.
Marty watches his parents on the dance floor and checks the photo tucked in his guitar strings. He's the only one left. My darling dear,
love you. George, aren't you gonna kiss me?
I don't know.
Scram, McFly. Cutting in.
A red-haired guy dances Lorraine away from George. She fights him, but he holds her tightly. On stage, Marty's fingers fumble the guitar strings. He falls against the piano.
Hey, boy, you all right?
I can't play.
The redhead laughs out loud, showing his horsey teeth. George turns away glumly and retreats from the dance floor. On stage, Marty watches his image fade from the photograph. He holds up his hand. It starts to fade, too. George returns, glaring at the redhead.
Excuse me.
With one push, he shoves his rival to the floor, then gently takes Lorraine's face in his hands. Drawing her to him, he tenderly kisses her. The vision of your happiness. Marty springs back to life. His brother and sister pop back into the photo, and Marty searches the crowd for his parents. From the dance floor, George waves a hearty salute, and Marty returns it, flexing his rejuvenated fingers. Lorraine and George sway in each other's arms, surrounded by waltzing couples. Marty rips off the guitar strap and snatches his photo from the strings.
Let's do another one.
No, I gotta go.
Come on, man. Let's do something that really cooks.
Something that really cooks.
Marty looks out over the cheering crowd and nods, smiling slyly at Marvin. He straps the guitar over his shoulder again and steps up to the mic.
All right. This is an oldie. But, it's an oldie where I come from.
He turns to the band.
All right, guys, listen, this is a blues riff and B. Watch me for the changes and try and keep up, okay?
The teenagers bop their heads to the music as Marty takes center stage.
Way down in Louisiana, down in New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Goode, who never ever learned to read or write so well. He could play a guitar just like he's ringing a bell. Go, 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 Johnny, go, go.
Couples take over the dance floor. Guys swing girls and flips over their heads.
Hey, George! I heard you laid out Biff! Nice going!
George, you ever think of running for class president?
A girl locks her hands around her date's shoulders as he lifts her straight over his head. Her petticoat falls upside down, exposing her black stockings. While Marty and the Starlighters jam, Marvin makes a phone call backstage.
Go, Johnny, go, go, go! Johnny, be good!
Marvin Barry, you know that new sound you're looking for? Well, listen to this.
Marty hops across stage, kicking one leg in front of him. The Starlighters exchange confused looks as Marty slides his fingers up and down the neck of the guitar. He climbs on top of an amplifier and windmills his arm, hammering the strings. Knees, he pounds the guitar neck with one finger, his face grimacing with strain. He rocks out with the guitar behind his head, then slides on his knees to the edge of the stage. Falling on his back, he creeps across the floor, past the band to the amplifier. In a frenzy, he kicks over the speaker. He screws his eyes shut, chopping the air with the guitar. His mouth hangs open as if the sound is coming out of him. When Marty opens his eyes, the kids are standing still, staring at him like open-mouthed statues with furrowed brows. Mr. Strickland holds his hands to his egg-shaped head.
I can't guess you guys aren't ready for that yet.
Marvin inspects his guitar.
But your kids are gonna love it.
Backstage, Lorraine waits for him by the steps.
Lorraine.
Marty, that was very interesting music.
Yeah.
I hope you don't mind, but George asked if he could take me home.
Great, good, good, Lorraine. I have a feeling about you, too.
I have a feeling, too.
Listen, I gotta go, but I wanted to tell you that it's been educational.
Marty, will we ever see you again?
I guarantee it.
Well, Marty, I want to thank you for all your good advice. I'll never forget it.
Right, George. Well, good luck, you guys. Oh, one other thing. If you guys ever have kids, and one of them, when he's 8 years old, accidentally sets fire to the living room rug, go easy on him.
Okay.
Lorraine stares wistfully after Marty as he runs out.
Marty, such a nice name.
Now, at the clock tower, Doc stares fiercely at his wristwatch.
Damn, where is that kid?
Then at his pocket watch.
Damn!
Another wristwatch.
Damn, damn!
The Packard peels into the square, and Marty jumps out, dressed in his jeans, sneakers, and goose-down vest.
You're late! You have no concept of time!
Hey, come on! I had to change! You think I'm going back in that suit? The old man really came through. It worked.
What?
He laid out Biff in one punch. I didn't know he had an enemy. He's never stood up to Biff in his life.
He shows Doc the restored photo.
Ever?
No, why? What's the matter?
Doc waves the thought away.
All right. Let's set your destination time.
The instrument panel reads 1985, 1:35 a.m.
This is the exact time you left. Let's send you back at exactly the same time.
He punches in the numbers.
It'll be like you never left. Now, I painted a white line on the street way over there. That's where you start from. I've calculated the precise distance, taking into account the acceleration speed and wind resistance retroactive from the moment the lightning strikes, which will be exactly 7 minutes and 22 seconds. When this alarm goes off, you hit the gas!
Right!
Doc winds an old-style bedside alarm and sets it on the dashboard.
Well, I guess that's everything!
Marty fixes him in a sober gaze.
Thanks.
Thank you!
Marty embraces Doc, clinging to him tightly.
In about 30 years...
I hope so.
Don't worry. As long as you hit that wire with the connecting hook at precisely 88 miles an hour, the instant the lightning strikes the tower.
He sticks his hands in his coat pockets.
Everything will be fine.
As Marty takes his seat behind the wheel, Doc pulls the sealed envelope out of his coat and frowns at it.
What's the meaning of this?
Find out in 30 years!
It's about the future, isn't it? It's information.
Wait a minute.
About the future! I warn you about this, kid! The consequences can be disastrous!
Doc, that's a risk you're gonna have to take! Your life depends on it!
No! I refuse to accept the responsibility!
In that case, I'll tell you straight out!
A falling tree limb snaps the cable loose.
Great Scott!
One end of the cable lies on the steps, while the other swings against the clock face, high over them.
You get the cable! I'll throw the rope down to
you! Right! I got it!
Doc runs runs into the tower building with the coil of rope, while Marty waits below. Sheets of lightning streak across the cloudy black sky as Doc races up the narrow stairs, two at a time. Inside the tower, the clock's rusty gears mesh their teeth as the hands jolt forward, 1 minute to 10. Doc squeezes his lanky frame through a shuttered window to the outside ledge. A bolt of lightning reflects on the snarling head of a gargoyle cat.
Doc!
The rope drops from 50 feet over Marty's head. Quickly, he knots it around the loose cable clamp.
Come on, let's go! Hooray! Make it up!
Doc raises the rope hand over hand.
Go!
Bursts of lightning draw closer to the tower. Marty cups his hands to his mouth.
Doc! I have to tell you about the future! I have to tell you about the future! On the night I go back, it's time you get...
Doc loses his footing and grabs the gargoyle's head. Frantically, he pulls himself up as the giant bell strikes 10.
No! No, Doc!
Look at the time! You got less than 4 minutes!
Marty tears to the DeLorean, sliding across its flat hood to get to the driver's seat. From the ledge, Doc blows a kiss at the departing DeLorean. Doc surveys his situation. He'll have to climb around the gargoyle to reach the swinging cable. Gulping, he braces himself against the statue and steps toward the clock. His shoe slips off the narrow ledge, and he moves more slowly, battered by the gusting winds. The old stone crumbles under his feet. Meanwhile, Marty spins a 180 turn to the words, "Start Here," painted on the street. Jumping out of the DeLorean's wing door, he fastens the 10-foot pole and connecting hook into the flux capacitor. It sticks straight up above the roof of the car like a giant antenna. Seated inside again, Marty grips the steering wheel.
Damn it, Doc. Why did you have to tear up that letter? I only had more time.
His gaze falls on the dashboard.
Wait a minute. I got all the time I want. I got a time machine. I can just go back early and warn him. Okay, 10 minutes ought to do it. Okay. Time circuit's on. Flux capacitor. Fluxing. Engine running. All right.
His face flushing, Marty cranks the engine.
No. Come on.
At the tower, Doc creeps closer to the loose wire. He holds the edge of the clock face as he stretches for the connecting cable. Unable to reach, he makes a desperate lunge. The ledge falls away, and he grabs for the clock's iron hands. He drops the clamp, but it hooks onto his pant leg. The clock's long hand marks another minute. At the starting line, Marty's headlights blink feebly as the car refuses to start. Doc's pants tear under the weight of the clamp, and he turns his ankle to keep it from dropping. The hanging cable rocks over him, nearly within his reach. On its next pass, he leaps and catches it. For a moment, he hangs there like a human connector between the two loose wires. Straining, he lifts his left leg where the clamp grips his cuff. When his foot comes into reach, he snatches the clamp free. In the DeLorean, Marty helplessly grinds the starter.
Here we go. This time, come on.
He butts his head into the steering wheel. Marty peels out on the wet street. Back at the tower, Doc spreads his feet across the broken section of ledge and steadies himself against the clock. His rubbery face grins with relief as he brings the two cables together, but they don't meet. The grounded cable is too short. The fallen tree limb still weighs it down. He needs less than an inch more slack. Doc's face twists as if he might cry, and he yanks the cord so hard it unplugs from another cable hanging from the lamppost. On the road, Marty shifts gears at 60 miles an hour. The speedometer climbs towards 70. Doc stands on the ledge, staring dumbfounded at the cable clamp. The clock marks another minute as jolts of electricity stab around the lightning rod on the roof. Marty turns into the square, headed for the straightaway. Doc presses his lips tightly and clamps the cables together as Marty stomps the accelerator to the floor. Doc loops the wire cabling around the clock's iron hands, forming a guideline off the ledge. Wrapping his gloved hands around the line, he sails to the ground, landing flat on his back. As the DeLorean hits 88, yellow sparks shoot from its wheels. Doc wrenches the last cable clamp free of the fallen limb. Marty's face grimaces against his speed, his eyes squeeze shut. Lightning blasts the clock tower, the wiring, and Doc. It leaps through him into the DeLorean, and Marty disappears. Only two flaming tire tracks remain in front of the town cinema. The smoking current sparkles and dies. Doc picks himself up and stares at the charred clock tower and the lamppost blazing like a torch. His stunned open mouth slowly turns up into a smile, and he jogs toward the cinema between the tire tracks still burning on the wet pavement. The charred connecting pole hangs between the lampposts. In the center of the street, Doc throws up his arms. He dances a jig, then stares joyously at the darkened clock, stopped at precisely 10:04. Helicopter hovers over the tower roof and shines a searchlight into the square. A bum sleeps on a bench under a blanket of newspapers with a radio beside him. He jumps to his feet as a flashing light startles him. At the end of the street, the DeLorean backs out of the old cinema, now an Assembly of Christchurch. The frost-covered DeLorean leaves a hole in the church as it returns to the town square. Marty jumps out of the wing door and gratefully smiles at the X-rated theater and the park bench bum.
Oh, Brett. You look great. Everything looks great. 124. I still got time. Come on, Doc.
Bouncing into the driver's seat, he turns the key.
No, not again. Come on.
The VW appears around the corner and speeds past Marty. Before he can get their attention, they skid around a corner and out of the square.
Libyans.
Marty runs after them, hurtling over Red asleep on the bench. Moments later, he lurches toward the parking lot of the Lone Pine Mall. Its digital sign reads 1:33 a.m. as the terrorists riddle Doc Brown with bullets. Marty screams, but from somewhere else.
No!
The gunman fires at someone behind Doc's van. Marty moves to a better vantage point and sees himself in a yellow radiation suit running from the terrorists. As the gunman struggles with his jammed weapon, the past Marty bolts for the DeLorean. Present Marty sees the fallen Doc behind the van and runs to his rescue. In his hurry, he tumbles down an embankment and into the lot. The terrorists take off after the DeLorean, circling the entire parking lot. Marty stares open-mouthed as the DeLorean passes him in a flash of blue sparks and disappears. The terrorist van careens out of control into a photo booth, smashing it to pieces.
Doc! Stop!
He rolls the old man over onto his back. Five bullet holes pierce the front of his white radiation suit. As Marty turns his face away, Doc's open eyes flutter. He sits up, bracing himself with his hands, and stares at Marty as if in a daze.
You're alive.
Doc pulls down the zipper of his jumpsuit. Underneath, flattened bullet slugs are stuck in a hard vest.
Bulletproof vest? How did you know? I never got a chance to tell you.
Doc takes a letter from inside his suit. Written on Lou's cafe stationery, it's now taped together and yellowed. Marty looks at the familiar handwriting.
What about all that talk about screwing up future events, the space-time continuum?
Well, I figured, what the hell?
Later at Marty's house, he steps from the passenger seat, his skateboard in his hand.
So how far ahead are you going?
About 30 years. It's a nice round number.
Look me up when you get there, all right? This will be about 47.
I will.
Take care.
You too.
He pets Einstein.
Bye-bye, Annie. Oh, man, watch that re-entry. It's a little bumpy.
You bet.
Marty waves the skateboard in his hand as he watches Doc back out of the driveway. As Marty walks toward the house, the DeLorean changes direction, accelerating behind him. Out of his view, a white flash lights up the tree-lined street. Marty passes the front door of his house and enters through a side gate. Daylight in Marty's bedroom. His alarm clock clicks to 10:28 a.m. Marty sleeps on his face on top of the covers, with one arm twisted behind his back. He still wears his shirt and jeans. His suspenders are pulled off of his shoulders. He stirs awake and sits up, looking around his room numbly.
Nightmare.
A few minutes later, he walks sleepily down the hall toward the front door. His mouth drops open at the sight of the tastefully decorated living room.
Well, if Paul calls me, tell him I'm working at the boutique late tonight.
Linda, first of all, I'm not your answering service. Second of all, somebody named Greg or Craig.
Marty's brother and sister sit at the dining table in business clothes.
I don't know. I can't keep up with all of your boyfriends.
Hey, what the hell is this?
Breakfast.
What, did you sleep in your clothes again last night?
Yeah, what are you wearing, Dave?
Marty, I always wear a suit to the office. You all right?
Yeah.
The McFlys enter, an attractive middle-aged couple in stylish clothes. Marty falls off his stool.
Oh. Mom, Dad,
Marty,
did you hit your head? You guys look great. Mom, you look so thin.
Why, thank you, Marty.
Her husband gooses her.
Good morning, sleepyhead. Good morning, Gabe.
Morning, Mom.
Elena.
Oh, Marty, I almost forgot Jennifer Parker called.
Oh, I sure like her, Marty. She is such a sweet girl. Isn't tonight the night of the big date?
What? When, Ma?
Well, aren't you going up to the lake tonight? You've been planning it for 2 weeks.
Well, Mom, we talked about this, but how can I go to the lake? The car's wrecked.
Wrecked? When the hell did this happen? And why?
George looks out the front door where a BMW is parked.
I want to know about these things.
See, there's Biff out there waxing you right now. Now, Biff, I want to make sure that we get 2 coats of wax this time, not just one.
Just finishing up the second coat now.
Now, Biff, don't con me.
Dumpy Biff wears a knit jogging suit.
I'm sorry, Mr. McFly. I meant I was just starting on the second coat.
Yeah, Biff, what a character.
In the living room, George and Lorraine cuddle in a chair.
top Biff ever since high school. Although, if it wasn't for him...
We never would have fallen in love.
That's right.
Mr. McFly! Mr. McFly, this just arrived! Oh, hi, Marty! I think it's your new book!
A box of novels entitled A Match Made in Space.
Oh, honey, your first novel.
Like I've always told you, you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything.
Oh, Marty! Marty, here's your keys. You're all waxed up, ready for tonight.
Keys?
In the garage, Marty stares in disbelief at a jet-black Toyota 4x4 with off-road tires and overhead floodlights. He socks it tenderly with his fist and leans on the driver's side door. Jennifer appears in the doorway.
How about a ride, mister?
Jennifer? Oh, you a sight for sore eyes. Let me look at you.
Marty, you're acting like you haven't seen me in a week.
I haven't.
You okay? Is everything all right?
Inside, his parents lovingly embrace.
Oh, yeah. Everything is great.
Marty and Jennifer share a tender kiss. The DeLorean crash lands in the driveway. Doc jumps out wearing a long yellow coat and crazy metallic glasses.
Marty!
He grabs Marty's shoulders.
You've got to come back with me!
Where?
Back to the future!
He paws through the McFly's garbage cans, collecting banana peels.
Wait a minute, what are you doing, Doc?
I need fuel!
The DeLorean has a Mr. Fusion home energy converter.
Go ahead, quick, get the car!
No, Doc, I just got here, okay? Jennifer's here, we're gonna take the new truck for a spin.
Well, bring it along! This concerns her, too.
Wait a minute, Doc. Well, what are you talking about? What happens to us in the future? Will we become assholes or something?
No, Marty. Both you and Jennifer turn out fine. It's your kids, Marty. Something has got to be done about your kids.
Seconds later, they sit beside Doc as the DeLorean zooms out of the driveway.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
He pulls the metal eye shade over his face and guns the engine. The DeLorean lifts off the street and tucks its tires underneath the chassis. It banks into a U-turn and heads straight for us. Now words appear, to be continued. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service WGBH Boston. Described by Michael Braden and Robin Sitton. Descriptions read by Carol Brooks. Major funding for DVS is provided by the United States Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. Credits appear. Michael J. Fox as Marty McFly. Christopher Lloyd as Dr. Emmett Brown. Leah Thompson as Lorraine Baines. Crispin Glover as George McFly. Thomas F. Wilson as Biff Tannen. Featuring Claudia Wells, Mark McClure, Wendy Jo Sperber, George DeCenzo, James Tolkien, Jeffrey J. Cohen, Casey Zemesko, Billy Zane, Harry Waters Jr., Donald Fullerlove, Lisa Freeman, Kristen Kaufman, Elsa Raven, Will Hare, Ivy Bethune. Unit Production Managers Dennis E. Jones and Jack Grossberg. First Assistant Director David McIffert. Second Assistant Director Pamela Ehlerson. Visual effects produced at Industrial Light and Magic, Marin County, California. Makeup created by Ken Chase. Art Director Todd Halliwell. Set Director Hal Gausman. Lead Person Art Smedley. Production Illustrators Andrew Probert and Dick Lasley. Set Designers Joseph E. Hubbard, Marjorie Stone McShirley, and Cameron Burney. Property Master John Zamansky. Assistant Property Masters Dangerous Bob Whitten and Joe Plotzgraf. Construction Coordinator Ernie Depew. Paint Foreman Kirk D. Hansen. Scenic and Graphic Artist Al Gaynor. Camera Operator Raymond Stella SOC. First Assistant Camera Clyde E. Bryan. Second Assistant Camera Stephen Tate. Still Photographer Ralph Nelson. Script Continuity Nancy B. Hansen. Production Sound Mixer William B. Kaplan. Boom Operator Earl F. Sampson. Utility Sound Darcy Weber. Costume Designer Deborah L. Scott. Key Customer Julie Starr Dresner. Men's Costume Supervisor Brian Callahan. Hairstylist Dorothy Byrne. Chief Lighting Technician Mark D. Walthour. Assistant Chief Lighting Technicians, Tom Marshall and Michael Paul Orifice. Electrical Lighting Technicians, George LaFontaine, Stephen R. Mathis, and Anthony Wong. Key Grip, Ronald T. Woodward. Best Boy Grip, Dan Cooper. Dolly Grips, Dick Babin and Wild Will McLean. Grips, Michael Saltz, Chuck Charay, and Dick Alexander. Special Effects Supervisor, Kevin Pike. Special Effects Foreman, Neil Smith and David Wishnack. Special Effects, Steve Suits, Kimberly Pike, Sam Adams, Richard Cronister, and William Klinger. DeLorean Time Travel Consultant, Ron Cobb. DeLorean Construction Coordinator, Michael Sheff. Music Supervisor, Bones Howe. Post-Production Supervisor, Arthur Rapola. Assistant Film Editors, Peter N. Lonsdale and Barbara Dixon. Supervising Sound Editors, Charles L. Campbell and Robert Rutledge. Sound Editors, Larry Caro, Sam Crutcher, Janice Hampton, Scott Hecker, John A. Larson, Harry B. Miller III, Chuck Neely, Bruce Richardson, Fred Stafford, and Jerry Sanford. Foley by John Roche. Supervising ADR Editor, Larry Singer, MPSE. ADR Editor, Alan Neinberg, MPSE. Music Editor, Kenneth Carman. Music Software, Dick Bernstein. Assistant Music Editor, Deborah Zimmerman. Assistant Sound Editor, Larry Falick. Assistant ADR Editors, Rod Rogers and Glenn T. Morgan. Process Sound Effects, Craig Harris. Apprentice Film Editors, Roger Jape and Charles Simmons. Apprentice Sound Editor, Sonny Pettyjohn. Re-recording Mixers, Bill Varney, Tenny Sebastian II, Robert Thurwell and Dan Leahy. Music Scoring Mixer, Dennis Sands. Orchestrations by James Campbell. Choreographer, Brad Jeffries. DGA Trainee, Conchetta Rinaldo. Production Coordinator, Maureen Osborne Beal. Assistant Production Coordinator, Rob Stevens. Production Associates, Stephen Talmy, Diana L. Hayes, Anthony Gibson, and Jeffrey R. Coates. Location Manager, Paul Pav. Production Controller, Bonnie Radford. Production Accountant, Leanne Moore. Assistant Accountants, Lynn D. Ezell, Robert R. Draney, and Ann Furia. Transportation Manager, Gene Schwartz. Transportation Coordinator, John Feinblatt. Transportation Captain, Bob R. Cornell. Transportation Captain, Picture Cars, Tom Garris. Craft Service, Ramon B. Pahoyo. Standby Painter, Jim Passanant. Animal Handlers, Robert Weatherwax and Richard Calkins. Unit Publicist, Marcia Robertson. Assistant to Mr. Zemeckis, Gail Olvier. Assistant to Mr. Canton, Babette T. Gorman. Assistant to Mr. Gale, Eileen O'May. Assistant to Mr. Spielberg, Julie Moskowitz. Assistant to Mr. Marshall, Marty T. Radford. Assistant to Ms. Kennedy, Kate Barker. Assistant to Mr. Rapola, Judy Thomason. Negative Cutter, Donna J. Bassett. Color Timer, Terry Hager. Opticals by Movie Magic. Title Design, Nina Saxon. Second Unit. Director, Frank Marshall. Director of Photography, Raymond Stella. First Assistant Director, Mitchell Bach. Cast. Jennifer Parker, Claudia Wells. Dave McFly, Mark McClure. Linda McFly, Wendy Jo Sperber. Sam Baines, George DiCenzo. Stella Baines, Francis Lee McCain. Mr. Strickland, James Tolkien. Skinhead, Jeffrey J. Cohen. 3D, Casey Zemesko. Match, Billy Zane. Marvin Barry, Harry Waters Jr. Goldie Wilson, Donald Fullilove. Babs, Lisa Freeman. Betty, Kristen Kaufman. Clock Tower Lady, Elsa Raven. Pa Peabody, Will Hare. Ma Peabody, Ivy Bethune. Sherman Peabody, Jason Marin. Peabody Daughter, Catherine Britton. Milton Baines, Jason Hervey. Sally Baines, Maya Bruton. Dixon, Courtney Gaines. Terrorist, Richard L. Duran. Terrorist Van Driver, Jeff Ohako. Scooter Kid Number 1, Johnny Green. Scooter Kid Number 2, Jamie Abbott. Lou, Norman Alden. Cop, Reed Morgan. Bystander Number 1, Saatchi Parker. Bystander Number 2, Robert Krantz. Guy Number 1, Gary Riley. Girl Number 1, Karen Petrasik. Bum, Buck Flower. Starlighters, Tommy Thomas. Granville Danny Young. David Harold Brown and Lloyd L. Tolbert. Pinheads, Paul Hansen, Lee Brownfield, and Robert DeLapp. Stunt Coordinator, Walter Scott. Stunts, Richard E. Butler, Charlie Crowell, Lauren James, Max Clevin, Bernie Pock, Spiro Rosatos, Robert Schmelzer, John Clay Scott, Per Wielander and Bob Yerkes. The Power of Love, performed by Huey Lewis and the News, courtesy of Chrysalis Records Incorporated. Written by Huey Lewis and Chris Hayes. Published by Hulix Music. Administered by Red Admiral Music Incorporated. Back in Time, performed by Huey Lewis and the News, courtesy of Chrysalis Records Incorporated. Written by Huey Lewis and Chris Hayes. Published by Hulix Music. Administered by Red Admiral Music Incorporated. Heaven is a Step Away, performed by Eric Clapton. Produced by Phil Collins, courtesy of Warner Brothers Records Incorporated, by arrangement with Warner Special Products. Time Bomb Town, performed by Lindsey Buckingham. Produced by Lindsey Buckingham and Richard Dowshett, courtesy of Elektra Records. Mr. Sandman, performed by the Four Aces, courtesy of MCA Records Incorporated. The Ballad of Davy Crockett, performed by Fess Parker, courtesy of Disneyland Vista Records. The Wallflower, Dance With Me Henry, performed by Etta James, produced by Maxwell Davis, courtesy of Kent Records. Night Train, performed by Marvin Berry and the Starlighters, produced by Bones Howe. Pledging My Love, performed by Johnny Ace, courtesy of MCA Records Incorporated. Earth Angel, Will You Be Mine, performed by Marvin Berry and the Starlighters, produced by Bones Howe. Johnny Be Good, performed by Marty McFly and the Starlighters, produced by Bones Howe. Original soundtrack available on MCA Records and cassettes. Special thanks to Mark Campbell, Tim May, Stephen Semmel, Greg Latiker, Steve Maslow, Ron Hitchcock, Photographic Illustration Company, Burbank, California, Group 4 Scoring Facility, The Honeymooners, excerpt used with permission of CBS Incorporated, film clip courtesy of Viacom Enterprises, Panaflex Camera and Lenses by Panavision, color by Technicolor. Recorded in Dolby Stereo in selected theaters. Certificate number 27831, Motion Picture Association of America. This picture made under the jurisdiction of IATSE, affiliated with AFL-CIO. Copyright 1985 by Universal Studios Incorporated. The characters and events depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Now our view zooms back from a brilliant full moon. A logo appears in silhouette in front of it. Elliot and E.T. on a flying bicycle. Letters ripple into view. Amblin Entertainment. This motion picture has been rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Some material may not be suitable for children. By the Classification and Rating Administration of the Motion Picture Association of America.